So,
I will talk about some properties of backbone transformations. And so, let me first explain why I think that backbone transformations might be of some importance in this ADS-CFT program. Well, the theory of integrable systems is usually based on the monodromy matrix. This monodromy matrix is, generally speaking, very non-local functional of the Wolschmidt fields. In ADS-CFT program, we are especially interested in the local dynamics on the Wolschmidt. So if you want to relate, well, we are interested in local dynamics for two reasons. First of all, if you want to relate to the CFT side, then it would be nice to compare string equations of motion to Feynman diagrams. And Feynman diagrams are local in the Lagrangian limit. And the second reason is that if you want to use integrability at higher genus amplitudes, then we certainly would want to see somehow integrability on the level, on the local level on the Wolschmidt, rather than operating in terms of this monodromy matrix. Now, it turns out that there are some integrable structures which are visible locally without using directly this inverse scattering approach. So first of all, the string sigma model has local conserved charges, and the Hamiltonian of these local conserved charges are, in general, the Hamiltonian flows of these charges are some non-local transformations of the Wolschmidt, because even the charges are local, but once we consider Hamiltonian flow by finite time, you get the non-local transformation of the Wolschmidt. But however, it turns out that there are special linear combinations of charges which generate backbone transformations, which are described by local equations. So these backbone transformations correspond to special shifts of time. They are very familiar for people who work on matrix models. In matrix models, for example, generalized in the Concevich model, this is related to KdV equation, and the matrix integral is related, the partition function is related to the tau function of KdV, and the KdV has these times on which the tau function depends. And these times correspond to local integrals of motion of KdV, and they are given by traces of the inverse powers of the matrix M. So these times are sums over eigenvalues, eigenvalue to the power minus n. Therefore, it is natural to consider going from n by n matrix to n plus 1 by n plus 1 matrix. And this corresponds to adding one eigenvalue of shift of this time by adding this special shift with the parameter mu. So this shift can be considered as as increasing the size of the matrix, or other people would think of this shift as creating the zero brain, or in the tau function language, this is the insertion of fermion. So there are different ways of thinking about it. The way I don't want to think of it, of this backbone transformation, is creating of soliton. And I don't want to think of it this way and explain why.
Which part is called backbone transformation?
Well, the backbone transformation is, in the definition which I'm going to use, is the special choice of time, is a special shift of time. I will explain what is special about it and how it works.
What's the definition of the backbone transformation?
This is an example of the backbone transformation. I'll probably give a definition later. Although I don't know the precise definition. Well, anyway, that's a good thing why we probably are interested in this backbone transformation, that sometimes in some models it has a good quantum version, which is called Q operator. This Q operator, it commutes with the monodromy matrix and satisfies the Baxter equation. T is the trace of the monodromy matrix, and so this Q satisfies this kind of difference equation. The coefficients here are model dependent. There are some functions of lambda, usually some simple functions of lambda, and the equation is written very schematically, but sometimes it allows us to find Q. Q is supposed to be related to the trace of the monodromy matrix. sometimes, but in very strange representation.
Lambda
is a parameter. Yeah, lambda in this case is some sort of spectral parameter. Yeah. About that, I will probably not be able to. Probably in the end, I will a little bit comment why this is a quantum version. I have some equation from which you can sort of guess that Q satisfying this equation. If you define Q from as some quantum operator satisfying this sort of equation. No, yes. Well, not Tn, but it's. Tn are kind of angle variables. So transfer matrix is the generating function of the integrals of motion. So it's the Hamiltonian flows which T generate are shifts of T. So this thing is a very quantum equation, but it can be guessed from classical limit. It can be guessed that this is correspond to that Backlund transformation. So I will.
Yeah, if you give me some info about how.
Yeah, I will. Let me write in the end of my talk. I will derive the following equation that the Backlund transformation is given by the spectral flow of some vector field, which I call psi, and that depends on this parameter lambda. And equation will be that the Hamiltonian of this vector field, dH over d lambda, is related to. Roughly speaking, to the logarithm of the t of lambda, which means that t of lambda equals e to the power dh over d lambda. Now, in some sense, this means that dh over d lambda, well, h is, have to be very careful, but if you do it carefully, then h is a generating function. So dh over d lambda is, in some sense, a variable conjugate to lambda. It's momentum conjugate to lambda. Then e to the power p lambda, x on shift operator with respect to lambda. So this means that e p lambda t of lambda equals t of lambda plus 1. If you do everything carefully, you reproduce the right difference equation. But I will not really discuss this. You can just guess, but I will not, because I don't understand this. So I will discuss, what I will discuss is that, it has not been done in this particular case. So I can, for those models where it was done by essentially Gaudin and Pasquier, and then Sklyanin and Kuznetsov and other people, and it was understood for lattice integrable systems. But I will discuss some properties of classical Backlund transformation for classical string in ADS times a sphere, and in the sector of fast-moving strings. So I will first tell you some general facts about Backlund transformations. Then I will. It's very difficult in this note. Let me see if I can do full screen. Oh, probably I can. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. So so I will first. So I will first give you some general facts about Backlund transformations, and then I'll discuss fast-moving strings, and then I'll discuss how Backlund transformations can be used for classical strings, how Backlund transformations act on classical strings. Then I will perhaps explain the Sine-Gordon sector, where the Sine-Gordon sector is when string is restricted to move on the two sphere inside S5. So in this Sine-Gordon sector, many explicit formulas are known, so I will be able to write everything very explicitly and show that Backlund transformation corresponds to creation of fermion. And then I will return to the general case of string in of classical string in S5, and I will derive that formula using the plane wave limit, but I will argue that it's actually exact derivation. And then I will remark on the relation with the finite gap solutions. So a general idea of Backlund transformation goes back to 19th century, and it says that if we have some partial differential equation, then we can try to do the following thing. Suppose that phi old is some solution of this differential equation. We can try to define a new function, phi nu, by the equation of the form d phi nu equals some function of local function of new and old and derivatives of phi old. And then we can ask various questions for, we can write general equation of this form and ask what are the compatibility condition for this equation, and sometimes they're equivalent to old PDE on this phi old. And we can ask if phi nu satisfies the same partial differential equation. So this kind of transformations are known as backbone transformations. And in the case of principal chiral model, that was studied in detail by Harnad Saint-Aubin and Schneider. Well, in this principal chiral model, the phase space is a space of functions from the Wolf sheet to group manifold, say SUN. And they satisfy this equation of motion. And the backbone transformation says that the new G is equal to old G times some unitary matrix. The unitary matrix depends on the spectral parameter, on I should say, the parameter of backbone transformation. In this case, it's a complex number with absolute value 1. But then you have to act to guess what is the right unitary matrix U, which leads you to the backbone type of transformation. And the right choice is that U equal related to some projector. So U is the unitary matrix which has two eigenvalues, unit eigenvalue and lambda bar over lambda. P is the projector. And it's a projector on the k-dimensional subspace. So Cn, n is from SUn, and the subspace satisfies the equations which are specifications of the zero curvature equation of the principal chiral model.
Yes.
U of course depends on G. Yeah, it depends on the solution. So you construct a new solution by multiplying the old solution by U, which and U in turn depends on G. This depends on G in the complicated way, but so it satisfies some strange equation. But in fact, this equation which U satisfies is secretly an auxiliary linear problem for the old solution G. So you can, given the auxiliary linear problem, is the problem on the is the linear equations on the vectors, right? N-dimensional vectors. But you can consider a k-dimensional, but this equation also, so it determines the connection on the space of vectors, but then it determines the connection also with zero curvature on the space of planes, k-dimensional plane. So it determines the connection on the Grassmannian. N is SUn, it's the group where G takes values. And K is, for ADS case, I think SU4 and 2, K equals 2. K is the dimension of L. So this is a specification of the zero curvature to the Grassmannian. And apparently, if you do it carefully, then it will. Well, this is called the backbone transformation, but I have to be very sketchy here because it's just ADS case is a particular case of this general scheme for principal chiral model. But let me tell you where it is better understood, this backbone transformation. It is better understood for lattice classical models. So the classical mechanics, finite dimensional. Principal chiral model is continuous integrable model. But let us study, let us consider the finite dimensional usual classical mechanics. So we consider a special type of classical mechanical models where the algebra of functions on the phase space is generated by the entries of the 2x2 matrix with this usual Poisson brackets given by the R matrix. And now to define this backbone transformation, we introduce an auxiliary phase space which is generated by the elements of another 2x2 matrix, which is completely auxiliary phase space, totally independent of the phase space which is generated by T. So T and M are in involution. But M is also a 2x2 matrix. And M satisfies the Poisson brackets on the M part of the, on the auxiliary phase space, has the same form with the same R matrix. Then we know from kind of what's known as co-multiplication that the product of T and M as 2x2 matrices satisfies the same bracket with the same R matrix as T and M. And the product M times T also satisfies the same equation. So there must be a canonical transformation which exchanges T and M. Tm equals M twiddle T twiddle. This defines a canonical transformation from T times M to T times M. T is our main phase space, which we are interested in, and M is this smaller auxiliary phase space. Now, if we impose the constraint M twiddle equals to M, then it turns out that, well, in some cases, this constraint allows to express M through T, and it gives now the transformation from T to T twiddle, from T to T. So it gives some transformation on our original phase space. And it turns out that this is also a canonical transformation, and this is the abstract version of Backlund transformation. So the cases where it worked, where the lattice, total lattice, where you have two n-dimensional phase space, and it sort of on each lattice sits a pair of canonically conjugate variables, p and x, and the L operator is given by this formula. And in this case, we choose auxiliary phase space in the same form as the phase space given sitting on each side. And then it turns out that if you do this procedure, then the Backlund transformation is given implicitly by the equations. So it's x to p goes to x prime p prime. And this transformation from x to p to x prime to p prime is by itself non-local because it's a difference equation roughly for x prime p prime. If you solve this equation for x prime p prime in terms of x and p, this is a lattice. So j goes from 1 to n, you get non-local in the sense that x1 prime would be expressed in terms of x2, p2, x3, p3. You will involve the sum over the lattice. But however, the equations themselves are local. And so this is the canonical transformation, which is a Backlund transformation for lattice toda. And toda lattice. And in this case, it was very well understood. And it is you can prove by the same methods as I just described that this is a canonical transformation, preserves Poisson structure. And also, one can construct quantum. One can prove so-called spectrality and construct the quantum version of quantum Q operator in this particular case. So it would be nice to do similar things, at least, for example, it would be nice to use the same method to prove canonicity in this principal chiral model. I don't think it has ever been done, and I certainly haven't done it. So what I will do here, and I will now return to a little bit more familiar things, which are classical, fast-moving classical strings, and I will explain how these Backlund transformations act on fast-moving classical strings. So, the study of fast-moving classical string was started in the works of Frolov and Zeitlin. And they studied a special class of string worksheets, which is now known as rigid strings. Now, these solutions which they studied are called rigid because the shape of the string does not depend on time. So when you evolve in time, the string evolves by some global rotation of ADS times sphere. And they explicitly constructed such such solutions. So they are basically parametrized by contours. The sphere is parametrized by three complex numbers, whose length square equals 1, and the profile of the string is given by this equation. So it depends on tau as the overall phase. So it's a global, when you change tau, the Wolschitz time, the string rotates by the global phase. So here double, and z of sigma, in order for this to satisfy equations of motion, z of sigma should satisfy the equations of Neumann integrable systems with certain constraints. So there's one constraint, but also z should be periodic only up to a phase, overall phase. So it turns out that for each choice of W1, W2, W3, there is in fact a discrete set of periodic trajectories. And therefore, for each choice, there is a discrete set of string Wolschitz. Now we can compute for the string Wolschitz the momenta with respect to Cartan subalgebra of FSO6. And so instead of parameterizing solutions by W's, we can parameterize them by momenta. And Frolov and Zeitlin found that the energy of the solution has an expansion of this form. which resembles the expansion of the perturbative expansion of dual Young-Mills theory. So they conjectured that these coefficients coincide with the anomalous with the expansion of anomalous dimension of the operator in terms of in the Hooft coupling constant. And this C they depend on the ratios of J's.
Is it classical
energy? Yeah, this is classical energy, but it matches the quantum Young-Mills. This is Frolov-Tatian story. In fact, these rigid strings correspond to operators extremizing the anomalous dimension in the sector with the given charges. And for all these cases where the field theory anomalous dimension was reproduced at least to one level, to one loop, it is true that every point on the string wall sheet is moving almost with the speed of light. And in fact, for the comparison with the field theory, it's more important that the string moves very fast rather than that the string is rigid. Therefore, it is natural to consider more general class of fast-moving strings. So in the limit when every point of the string moves with the speed of light, the volt sheet becomes a null surface, which is a degenerate volt sheet. And then it turns out that there is a perturbation theory in powers of relativistic factor, which allows us to construct fast-moving string as a perturbation of the null surface. Null surfaces can be written down explicitly. They satisfy very simple equations, and they are very simple. They are basically just special collections of light rays. And then we construct our fast-moving string as a perturbation of the null surface. One way to construct this perturbation theory is to use a special set of volt sheet coordinates such that epsilon is small in the fast-moving limit, so the action becomes of this form, the volt sheet action. And then this term is perturbation, and the first term describes the free theory of continuum of non-interacting particle, and this is perturbation. Yeah, you perturb in this epsilon, you just
consider. So you say that the reason that the shape of the string is kept is because the sigma derivative term.
No, those solutions considered by Frolov and Zetlin are special. This setup gives you much more general class of solutions. In particular, for those solutions, which there are rigid solutions also fit into this category, but there are there is a discrete set of rigid strings, and they are not dense in the space, in the phase space of classical string. But these solutions are, in a sense, they cover some corner in the. This is a perturbation theory for classical strings. So it was then conjectured. This is provocative conjecture. It may be true or not, but it's useful to think about it, whether this is true or not, that the Young-Mills perturbation theory corresponds to this perturbation theory. So I provoke you by this conjecture, and it was useful to think about it. Now, we know important property is integrability. So there are infinitely many local conserved charges. And now I will discuss integrability from the point of view of null surface perturbation theory and discuss the Spallmeyer charges from the point of view of null surface perturbation theory. So to construct the Spallmeyer charges, we first turn off the fermionic degrees of freedom. I consider a classical bosonic string on ADS 5 crosses 5. Let us parameterize the sphere by just 6 real numbers, by the vector in R6. Then the first Spallmeyer charge exists simply because the target space is a direct product of two manifolds. So D plus Y square is sort of an energy-momentum tensor, except for the S5 part of energy-momentum tensor. The total energy-momentum vanishes, but the S5 part totally separately does not vanish. It's 2,0 operator. Now, if we allow it to take a square root, we will get a 1,0 operator. And then, of course, it corresponds to conserved current. And we can compute the corresponding conserved charge. Of course, this all manipulations are true only in classical theory. And moreover, the string should preferably move fast, because if the string vanishes at some point, then you will have problem extracting square root. But if the string moves fast everywhere, you can take a square root. And this is a nice, smooth charge. So the right charge is constructed in the same way. And now, these two charges exist whenever the target space is a direct product. But the special properties of S5 allow us to construct the second charge. Now, in the flat space, this would be enough. This would be a closed form. And it may look cumbersome, but in fact, all these factors are dictated by reparametrization invariance, independence of the choice of coordinates and conservation. So because of d plus d minus y equals 0, this would be conserved in flat space. In curved space, d plus does not commute on d minus on vectors, but the special properties of the curvature tensor for S5 allows us to compensate the derivative of this with some additional piece. And in fact, it turns out that there is an infinite tower of charges. And in fact, four infinite towers. So there is one left and one right for sphere, and there is one left and one right tower for EDS. Now, if we consider this higher conserved charges as Hamiltonians, we can compute the corresponding Hamiltonian vector field, which we will denote psi to n. The explicit formulas for this Hamiltonian vector field can be very complicated. But it turns out that there are special linear combinations of these Palmier charges, such that the Hamiltonian flows of these special linear transformations are Backlund transformations, of these special linear combinations are Backlund transformations. And they can be described by explicit first order equations. So we can almost explicitly describe actually the, and moreover, so that the arbitrary flow by the arbitrary combination of local conserved charges can be approximated by some combination b gamma 1 b gamma n with large enough n. So in this sense, the Backlund transformation is fully characterized the Hamiltonian flows of the local charges. So let us describe what are these Backlund transformations and what particular linear combinations. So in terms of thinking about this individual charges, you think about certain linear combinations and evolution by finite time. Well, I will now introduce this Backlund transformation sort of axiomatically by requiring three basic properties. The first property is I will call spectrality. This is a little bit abuse of notation because Sklyanin and Kuznetsov use spectrality in some stronger sense, but I couldn't find a better word. So I use spectrality for saying that the Backlund transformations, which I denote B gamma Y, are generated by some linear combinations of local conserved charges. So I take this linear combination, I will denote it psi gamma. It depends on the real parameter gamma, so the coefficients depend as functions of gamma. So there are left and right charges, and therefore there are left and right Backlund transformations. The second property, which is crucial, of course, is the Backlund equations. These are the sort of equations which allow us to determine B gamma Y in terms of Y. So this is equations for derivative of B gamma Y. It determines D minus B gamma Y and D plus B gamma Y in terms of Y. So again, there is pair of equations for left Backlund transformation and pair of equations for right Backlund transformation. And they depend on two parameters, gamma and gamma tidal. We also, in fact, well, we want to use this equation to sort of define B gamma Y, but you can see that if B gamma Y solves this equation, then B minus gamma Y also solves this equation because gamma enters here as gamma square. So in order to remove this ambiguity, I would require the third property, which is that when gamma goes to zero and gamma tvidal goes to infinity, I want B gamma to be equal to Y minus gamma D plus Y, and B gamma tvidal equals Y plus 1 over gamma tvidal. You can see from this that when gamma is very small, when gamma is zero, then this is infinity, so it requires that by equals y. And so here when gamma tvidal equals large. But then the second correction, the first correction will be should be this and this, respectively. The traditional definition of Backlund transformations in the literature uses only Backlund equations, only these equations, and does not say anything about the spectrality property. This thing is not considered necessary. And in fact, most of the cases when in the literature, Backlund transformations are used to create, say, kink from vacuum. And of course, the values of conserved charges on kink are different from values on the vacuum, so it can possibly be generated by local conserved charges because they all commute. But in fact, the traditional definition of Backlund transformations is more general than our definition. And most of the Backlund transformations do not satisfy the spectrality property. So what happens is that these Backlund equations do not determine big gamma y unambiguously, because if you look at them, of course, they are differential equations. And in solving this differential equation, you have to choose initial condition. And for most of the choices initial condition, you get totally new solution. But however, there is a special choice of initial conditions, which would, for which the new solution would be flow of the old solution by local conserved charges. So we will call a spectral Backlund transformation the one which is generated by the flow of local conserved charges. And in fact, how can we characterize the special choice of the solution? It turns out that spectral Backlund transformation is related to perturbative solution of Backlund equations. For small gamma, we can solve the Backlund equations perturbatively as a series in gamma. So we start with this equation, and then there are higher order terms in gamma. And we solve it perturbatively order by order. And so if the series converges, then so defined big gamma y is a spectral solution. So this series of local conserved charges can be thought of as series in powers of gamma. In fact, t to n of gamma is somewhat of the order gamma to the power n. So if you solve these equations perturbatively, then we get big gamma equals identical transformation plus first correction plus second correction, and so on. And in perturbation series in gamma, we can formally take a log of this transformation. This is, of course, makes sense only for perturbation series in gamma. But once we define this log, for example, delta small 1 equals just delta capital 1, and so on. You just take the logarithm of transformation in perturbation theory in gamma. So once you define this delta 1, delta 2, then if the series converges, then you get the definition of log B. Now, I haven't proven that big gamma is a canonical transformation, but if we assume it, then delta N should be Hamiltonian vector fields. And one can see that delta N commute with the second Palmeier charges, and therefore it's a standard law in this Liouville theory saying that this delta N should be, in fact, the linear combination of this local conserved charges. So spectral equals to perturbative. Spectral solution equals perturbative solution. But it turns out that there is an alternative perturbation theory, which is the null surface perturbation theory. And this null surface perturbation theory gives the same spectral solution of Backlund equations. So this null surface is the same null surface perturbation theory which I described. It's perturbation powers of epsilon. So in the null surface limit, each point on the string pole sheet moves on a separate equator of the sphere, and different points do not interact with each other. So d tau y is much larger than d sigma y. And the Backlund equations can be solved explicitly. And what they say, basically, this this Backlund transformation on the null surface says that every point on the string just shifts along the corresponding equator, determined by the velocity of this point. It shifts by the fixed angle. And this angle is precisely equal to two arctangents of the arctangent of that parameter of the Backlund transformations. And then we can start with this first order, and then corrected by high orders in 1 over d tau y, and construct order by order in perturbation theory on null surfaces. And the coefficients will be rational functions of gamma, because all the calculations were rational in gamma. So the coefficients will be rational functions of gamma. So we conjecture that the series of the null surface perturbation theory converge and determine this big gamma y when the string moves fast enough. This is related to the convergence of the series in the spectrality property. So the series should be converged. And in fact, there is a conjecture of improved charges. The conjecture says it's possible to choose these local charges in such a way that n's charge is proportional to 1 minus k, to d tau y has this order of smallness in the null surface perturbation theory. In Vic, there are different forms of this improved charges. They were probably first discussed by Rutunov and Studacher. There are different forms of this conjecture. The Vic form is rather easy to prove, but it's probably enough for convergence. Well, anyway, there are these improved charges. Now, so I told you that these Beckmann transformations can be constructed perturbatively either in gamma or in null surface perturbation theory, and this two perturbation theories in fact give the same result, and both give you spectral Beckmann transformations. Let me now discuss some properties of Beckmann transformations. The most important property is perhaps commutativity, but in my definition it just follows from spectrality because all this Hamiltonian flows commute. And the important consequence of commutativity and Beckmann equations, if you play with them, is the composition law, which is known as the tangent rule. This tangent rule says that when you apply two different Beckmann transformations, if you know B gamma 1 y and B gamma 2 y, then you can construct their composition by solving purely by purely algebraic operation. You don't need to consider differential equations anymore. So this is a very nice property. And if I discuss the in Sine-Gordon, the analogous property is closely related to the bilinear identity for the tau function. It's essentially equivalent to the bilinear identity. The tangent rule also exists for the composition of left and right Beckmann transformation. And for the composition of left and right, there is a very nice picture I can draw. So what this composition rule tells you is that x and b bit middle x, if you add these two vectors, I drawn here the ADS picture. The sphere picture is the same, of course, but it's for ADS part. So if you add x and b bit middle x, then it's the same as if you add b1x and b2 middle x. So you draw a geodesics between b1x and b2 middle x. You find the middle point of this geodesics, and you draw another geodesics through x and the middle point, and then extend it by the same distance, and you find this point. It's purely algebraic operation. And by the way, it can be written, it just says that this vector is collinear with this vector. So by the way, this is bilinear, but I'm not sure if this is the same bilinear identity. Yeah, but then so now let me describe one more interesting property, which is the existence of action variable. So the null surface perturbation theory, even so we defined originally as expansion, B gamma as expansion around gamma equals zero, and B twiddle as around gamma twiddle equals infinity. But in fact, in the null surface perturbation theory, it's not necessary that gamma equals zero because it's a different perturbation theory. It has different small parameter. So if we construct the same spectral solutions by null surface perturbation theory, we can extend to finite values of gamma and gamma tilde. And even we can put gamma equal to gamma tilde. And when we put gamma equal to gamma tilde, then we see with some surprise, you could look at these equations, Beckmann equations, and see a very interesting thing, which I tried to conceal for a while, is that if you substitute b twiddle y equals minus b y, then you solve this equation. So b twiddle, since this equation determined unambiguously, at least in perturbation theory, b y, you see that from this equation that b twiddle equals minus b solves this equation. So it should be that in perturbation theory, in null surfaces, b twiddle y equals minus b y if gamma equals gamma twiddle. So there is just a change in sign in b. Well, now given that b equals e to the power xi and b twiddle e to the power xi twiddle, it implies something for xi and xi twiddle. So here gamma equals gamma twiddle. The naive guess that xi equals xi twiddle is wrong, of course. because we take the logarithm, so something interesting happens. In fact, psi minus psi tvdl is not zero. It's non-trivial vector field, but it generates periodic trajectory. So when you exponentiate it, you get identical transformation. Therefore, if H gamma and H gamma tvdl are Hamiltonian of this vector field, psi and psi tvdl, then their difference, in fact, does not depend on gamma and is an action variable. Independence of gamma can be either verified directly or follows from the uniqueness of the action variable. The action variable cannot be deformed. And if you do a similar thing for ADS part, then we can also define the same Backlund transformations by the same equations as we did for the sphere part. I put index A, which tells me that it's a ADS part. And in fact, so we can construct the same, also use null surface perturbation theory, construct corresponding logarithms of vector fields generating them. And then in the sphere part, this was identity. But in ADS, because there is non-contractible loop, if you really follow what happens, you see that this is a DEC transformation. You go around once around non-contractible cycle of ADS. So it exchanges the string, and this transformation, the string geometrically becomes of the same shape, but it's now on the different cover of ADS space. So, and this DEC transformation should correspond to e to the power energy shift on the field theory side. So this suggests that if we construct these quantum versions of Backlund transformation, for example, if we guess it perhaps from this equation or there are other ways of, if you somehow find this Q, then the problem of finding the spectrum is solved, because the spectrum of Young-Mills or the spectrum of classical strings, which should perhaps be equal to spectrum of Young-Mills, would be given just this expression when gamma equals gamma tvdl. So the spectrum, in other words, the spectrum will be reproduced from the Baxter operator. Mm-hmm. Based on this classical analogy, perhaps. I think this would be true in quantum level. So if you find Baxter operators, then you find the spectrum. Now, I wanted to discuss the special case. Let me discuss it very briefly. The special case when strings move on R cross S2 inside ADS times a sphere. So in this case, equations of motion actually follows from Virasoro constraints. And it turns out that this model, string on R cross S2, is equivalent to Sine-Gordon. It was the result of Palmeier. The explicit map is given by this equation. And so Sine-Gordon follows from equations of motion of string. There is something a little weird about this map from string to Sine-Gordon, because it's not true that canonical Poisson structure corresponds to canonical Poisson structure of the string. Poisson structures of string is different from Poisson structures of Sine-Gordon. For example, in the free field limit, when phi is very small, phi is the Sine-Gordon field, the canonical Poisson structure of Sine-Gordon will be just, well, it's actually not only in the, but in this, well, this is the canonical Poisson structure of Sine-Gordon, but in the limit when phi is small, the map, it corresponds to plane wave limit on the string side. And the plane wave limit means that string is localized near the equator, so this y is very small, right? And then the map from, in this plane wave limit, the map from Sine-Gordon field to the string field would be given by this. And the Poisson structure, so the Poisson structure corresponding to Sine-Gordon is very strange, because the Poisson structure should be this. Y with y dot equals, y dot is conjugate to y, but here we see that d sigma y is conjugate to d sigma y dot. It's a different Poisson structure. We suspect that this is the second Poisson structure of the O3 model, but I haven't verified this directly. So it's like, so in this sense, if Sine-Gordon is actually closely related to KdV, in some sense KdV is one half of Sine-Gordon. And the canonical Poisson structure of Sine-Gordon would correspond to the one in KdV which generates Virasoro algebra. But there is the second, the other one. So the other compatible Poisson structure of the KdV. So quantization of string on on the sphere would be rather closer to quantization of KdV in the other Poisson structure, if my intuition is right. Well, anyway, the Backlund transformation for string is related to Backlund transformation for sine Gordon in the most naive way one can expect. And so what happens for sine Gordon is that we can, well, first of all, let us just define the times, or the perturbative solution for Backlund transformation is spectral, so it's generated by shifts of time. So let us define higher times so that the Backlund transformation by definition would be equal to this shift of time. For a while, this is just a definition, but let us see. This is just a definition of times for now. Well, one can see that the tangent rule for sine Gordon is given by this equation. It's analogous for that diamond-shaped tangent rule for ON model, which I drawn before, and it corresponds to it. And so this explains why it's called tangent rule, because for sine Gordon, where it first was discovered, there is a tangent here. But then if we use this substitution phi equals I log tau plus over tau minus, then this tangent rule will follow from the so-called bilinear identity for the tau function. And this bilinear identity, so there are three sets of them for BB, B B-tweedle, and B-tweedle, B-tweedle. So this bilinear identity imply the tangent rule. And in fact, if we use the substitution, then the equations of motion of sine Gordon would, of course, follow from this bilinear identities. They're called bilinear because they're bilinear in tau. And this bilinear identity can be solved because we can interpret them as Plucker identities or weak rules for Plucker identities for determinants or weak contraction, weak theorem for free fermions. So it turns out that for so-called rational solutions, which are dense in a sector, the tau plus minus is the determinant of 1 plus minus some n by n matrix. This n by n matrix depends on the set of parameters lambda and b. This lambda and b are, in fact, almost canonically conjugate, but not quite. The thing which is missing is that the Poisson bracket of two b's is non-zero. So lambdas are action variables, but b's are not quite angle variables. You have to multiply b by some rational functions of lambda. Well, anyway, this is solved by this substitution. And then it is possible to express this through free fermions. I cannot go through details now. And in fact, the details are well known. So you introduce the free fermions psi of mu on the some two-dimensional space, which is related, of course, to spectral curve. So these fermions live on some two-dimensional complex space. And the tau function is the correlator of this free fermion, so certain correlation functions of this special form. And then there is the Bazinization formula. So what I want you to... And from Bazinization, the bilinear identity follows from the weak contractions for this fermion, weak theorem in the free fermion theory. So what I want you to... The conclusion from this section is that... the Backlund transformation, in fact, corresponds to on the sine Gordon language to the insertion of the fermion. So Bazinization formula says that exponential of this particular, these are kind of sum over n, these are the local conserved charges. So you act by certain combination of local conserved charges, and you get the insertion of fermion. So you take one of the fermions from the Fermi C and put it at point lambda, is this lambda. And this also can be understood in this way. So you integrate U1 current from point zero to point lambda. And this is, of course, so this is generating function of Backlund transformation. If you differentiate with respect to lambda, then K here, it's the fermion charge is conserved, of course. Yeah, so the tangent rule, and so the Backlund transformations correspond to insertion of fermion, and the tangent rule corresponds to the bilinear identity, which follows in turn from weak theorem. Now, to write a little bit more explicit formulas in ON case, I would use a plane wave limit. There must be more scientific way of doing it, but I will do it through plane wave limit. So in the plane wave limit, the string moves very fast, and also it's located near the equator of S5. So it's a subset of general fast-moving strings. It's, you squeeze the string near the equator. There are such fast-moving solutions which are in particular localized near the equator. So there are two small parameters now. The 1 over m, m is usually called BMN mass. It's sometimes denoted also mu. So 1 over m is small parameter. Mu is the BMN square root is square root of mu square plus n square. So this is m is large parameter. And also there is a parameter epsilon which measures the deviation from the equator. So this orthogonal coordinates, why? This is coordinates which measure the deviation from the equator. They are of the order epsilon. This is a plane wave limit. And there is a relation. So this epsilon related to J is the, what is called BMN momentum. It's angular momentum of the string. Well, of course, we can solve these Backlund equations in this particular limit because it's essentially a free field limit. All equations become quite simple. And it turns out that B gamma acts on the oscillators just by rotating the phase of the oscillator. And the rotation, so omega n is the BMN square root. It's just the mass of the corresponding excitation. And so the Backlund transformation corresponds to this particular phase rotation. And x plus and x minus are just shifted. This formula we have also seen. This is arctangent, which is in the strict plane, in the strict null surface limit, it will be just a shift along the equator. Now, yeah, psi gamma is sort of logarithm of the Backlund transformation. It's a vector field for which the evolution by the finite time gives you Backlund transformation. So you basically just take the log of this. And then you can see that this is generated by the Hamiltonian. So J is the BMN momentum. And this Hamiltonian generates this transformation. So I want to study this H gamma and see how it corresponds to how it is generated by Palmeier charges. This is the Hamiltonian. I want to see how it is related to Palmeier charges. And this is very easy to see in the plane wave limit because I just, well, in fact, there is a generating function for this Palmeier charges. This is not in the plane wave limit. This is general. So this is generating function of the local Palmeier charges if you expand in gammas. And in the explicit computation, in the plane wave limit gives this expression in terms of BMN oscillators. So if I compare this equation for H gamma with this expression for the generating function of Palmeier charges, then I can see that if I differentiate it with respect to gamma, if I differentiate H gamma with respect to gamma, then this becomes this. The logarithm becomes the rational function after differentiation with gamma. So the relation is this, actually. dH over d gamma equals proportional to epsilon of gamma. And of course, for gamma equals 0, it's identical transformation. So we have H gamma for 0 equals 0. So it's given by the contour integral. Of course, so what happens, of course, this contour integral is, in fact, it gives, remember, epsilon of gamma. Epsilon of gamma has expansion in powers of gamma. And at least for fast-moving strings or for small enough gamma, this expansion should converge. So if you substitute this expansion in this contour integral, we see that what this contour integral tells us is, in fact, that H gamma is an infinite linear combination of this epsilon to n with the coefficients which have of the order gamma to the power to n plus 1. So this is the spectrality. This is the fact that H gamma is generated by these local charges. But the coefficients should be universal, of course. They are universal functions of gamma. They should work for all solutions, and in particular in the plane wave limit. So we derived these coefficients in the plane wave limit, but since they are universal, the plane wave limit in this sense gives the exact result. So this is now the expansion of... this series also possible to view as series in the null surface perturbation theory because of the improved charges. And in fact, the improved charges can be constructed in the following way. Suppose that we take this epsilon of gamma and decompose it not in the powers of gamma, but in the powers of gamma square over 1 plus gamma square, which is denoted sine square alpha. And then you can see in the plane wave limit that this coefficients would be improved in a sense that in the null surface perturbation theory, they would be of the order 1 over m to the power k minus 1. I think that, well, it should be true that this statement should be true also outside of the plane wave limit, but I don't have a rigorous proof. The rigorous proof basically amounts to proving the existence of these improved charges. But that would be interesting to derive this formula, for example, in the finite gap, in the finite gap technology. I don't know to do it, but this is the expression for these improved charges which are. So, of course, we can substitute this equation now in the integral formula, right? In this integral formula, and now we get the expansion in terms of local conserved charges, in terms of improved charges, with some complicated coefficients, which are, again, functions of gamma, some elementary functions of gamma, but cumbersome. So now I want to discuss how it is related to the finite gap approach and to the monodromy matrix. And will you give me 5 minutes? Because I'm a little bit over time, but I need only 5 minutes to discuss this. So the monodromy matrix is defined as the ordered exponential of the Lux connection. So this t plus y, which I, and b minus y, which I, this is considered as a vector of SL6, as an element of SL6. So for the definition of the quasi-momenta, yeah, we have to take this as a spinner representation of SL6, and then takes the eigenvalues in the spinner representation. And so the eigenvalues are called quasi-momenta. And Arutyunov and Zamaklar, in the recent, very interesting paper, used this technology of Harnett and Saint-Aubin. And they expressed the generating function of Palmeier charges defined by through this Backlund transformation. They express it in terms of quasi-momenta. So it's basically that gamma corresponds to some, there is a non-trivial correspondence between gamma and the spectral parameter, which lives on the spectral curve. And so this particular combination gives the definition in the sense of Palmeier. So if you introduce the signs, 1, 1, minus 1, minus 1, and then substitute this equation into our equation integral representation, then we get the following formula, that the Hamiltonian is equal to the integral of this particular meromorphic differential on the spectral curve, but this meromorphic differential, of course, gives you the action variable, which they independently, of course, constructed in the finite gap approach. But the finite gap, but the action variable is given when you integrate over the full contour, over the closed contour. But if you integrate this meromorphic differential between finite points, then this is the Hamiltonian of the Backlund transformation, which, given the analogy of Sine-Gordon, suggests that in some sense this combination of quasi-momenta is bilinear current of fermions. But I don't know a fermionic description of the O-N model. So in the finite gap approach, of course, finite gap means that we consider the periodic solutions. And usually what it happens is that this quasi-momentor are not single-valued function of the spectral parameters, but the single-valued on some Riemann surface, which is a cover of the plane of spectral parameters. So there are cuts here. And in fact, for generic strings, these cuts condense near x equals minus 1 and x equals minus 1. That's the point where the Lux matrix, Lux connection has a, sorry, where the transfer matrix has essential singularities. So the cuts connect, condense here. There are many, many cuts. But apparently in the plane, so what should happen is that for the fast moving sector, if the string moves fast enough, then the structure of these cuts is so special that this particular combination is the signs 1, 1, minus 1, minus 1 should be single valued here in some domain around x equals 1. And in fact, would have nice expansion around x equals 1. And the coefficients of the expansion are, of course, local conserved charges. So it would, well, it would be interesting to understand if we take as meromorphic differentials other combination of quasi-momenta, whether they would have any geometrical meaning like Bekon transformations. And just to finish, well, of course, there is a number of things here to develop all the things, and it would be very nice to prove the canonicity of Backlund transformations, which I sort of assumed, perhaps following this method of Harnett sent to Ben and somehow fusing it with the Sklanian's method. And then it would be interesting perhaps to understand the role of the tau function in the Wolschitz sigma model and to see if ADS sigma model has a description in terms of free fermions. It would be also interesting to think about the Q operator, which is supposed to be a quantum analog of Bekon transformations. Can we guess this Q operator for the Wolschitt sigma model? Or perhaps we could guess it on the field theory side, or perhaps we could guess the Bekon equations on the field theory side. This Q operator is, of course, would allow us to find energy spectrum immediately, if this formula is right. But and it was guessed in KDV. It was guessed by Bajanov, Lukyanov, and Zamolodchikov. It was constructed by some trick. But maybe we could also eventually guess constructed for ADS sigma model. Also, thank you for watching.
So, but you are expecting this Q operator to correspond to the quantization of the system?
Well, in the I expect it to exist in the to exist such an operator acting on the phase space on the Hilbert space of the quantum sigma model. Yes.
Yeah, but you need supersymmetry.
Yes. Oh yeah. Of course. Yeah. Yes. This is bosonic. Yeah.
The one you want to compare with K theory should be.
Absolutely. Yes. In fact, it has not been even. I don't even know precisely how Backlund transformations act if you turn on fermions. The Backlund transformation should mix somehow ADS with the sphere because there are no separate local conserved charges for sphere part and for ADS part. Fermions sort of break it. So it's only the combinations kind of epsilon ADS minus epsilon sphere, the combinations corresponding to traces of the Casimir, Young-Young Casimirs that survive the supersymmetric. So instead of two separate transformations, Backlund transformations for sphere and for ADS, we have to have one transformation. Only one will survive, which will be kind of diagonal between sphere and ADS. And then, but it is not necessarily that precise knowledge of this Backlund transformation would allow us to find a U operator. In the sense of, in the case of lattice TODA, it was possible to construct what is called the generating function of this Backlund transformation classically, which is somewhat similar to very, very roughly similar to this formula. But except for generating functions means that you need not the Hamiltonian here. but the generating function of the finite transformation. So the generating function of the symplectomorphism, morphism, which is the evolution by H gamma by the finite time. So it turns out that if there is, it is possible to construct this generating function, which is called f, then df over d lambda is again equal to essentially to some quasi-momenta here. So this is what Sklyanin and Kuznetsov call spectrality. But if you know precise equation for spectrality in terms of this generating function of background transformation, then perhaps it would allow, perhaps it would give some hint about how Baxter operator acts, because the symbol of Baxter, the kernel of Baxter operator is exponential of the generating function of background transformation. But it was not how it was constructed for KdV. It was completely different approach.